Morning. Today's daf and Shabbat Sadi. Hey, we are in the bottom of the Sadi Dal in the days. We are four lines from the bottom. We're going to be starting this morning with the words V'chein HaGodeles. Finishing up the 10th parak of the Masechta. Tomorrow, Mir Hashem, we're going to be finishing the parak. Here at the end of the 10th parak, we're going to be going over an assortment of activities on Shabbat that are going to be Asar, either Midoraisa or Midorabanan. Not really fitting into the theme of our parak. Our parak continued its discussion regarding the Malacha Hotzah and various rules regarding the Malacha Hotzah. We dealt with, in the course of this short 10th parak of the Masechta, some of the most basic rules regarding Malachos. We talked about Shnaim Shasua, what happens if two people participate in doing a singular Malacha, what would become the outcome of that. We spoke about Shinui, doing something Kalach Yad. So we spoke about some very basic principles as it relates to Malacha Shabbos, but here, at the end of the 10th parak, we're going to be discussing some details regarding a number of activities not really related to Hotzah. The Mishnah, if you take a look at the Mishnah on Sadi Dal Amud Beis, we did the Mishnah yesterday, the Mishnah talked about removing fingernails on Shabbos, right? Cutting fingernails. Cutting fingernails using your hands, your teeth, using a kli, removing hair, both on the face, mustache, and also other types of cosmetic activities. Godeles, kocheles, pokeses. So these kinds of activities on Shabbos are going to be aser. What degree of iser? So that was a debate in the Mishnah. In the Mishnah, we know that Rabbi Lazar says that Yerchayv, Kayachayv Karmachatis, is an iser daraisa, and the Chachamim say it's aser mishum shvus. Shvus is a term that's used to describe something which is aser midrabanan. The word shvus comes obviously from the word Shabbos, but it means cessation, stopping. And that means to say that the Chachamim demanded that we stop this kind of behavior, this kind of activity, and all this is to be discussed now in the Gemara. So we are going to be going over the latter half of that Mishnah. Yesterday we talked about the removing of fingernails and the removing of hair, discussing whether or not it's an Issa D'Oraisa, it's an Issa D'Rabbanan. Briefly we touched on the issue of Malacha Shein Tzrich L'Gufa, which the Gemara itself does not raise, but Tosfos does, and we discussed that briefly yesterday. Anyway, we're going to continue today where we leave off. V'chein HaGodeles. So Godeles Kocheles Bokeses Mishum Mai Mechayvei. So the Gemara's question now is very simple: these activities of Godeles and Kocheles and Pokeses, under what category, under what Malacha do they file under? Let's remind each other what are these activities. So Godeles is braiding of the hair, Kocheles is putting on some sort of makeup. And Pokeses, well, Rashi yesterday in the Mishnah gave two explanations of what that is. Rashi says that you're metaking sa'ara b'masrik. So the first pshat of Rashi is that you're combing your hair with a comb. Second pshat in Rashi is that you're putting on something on the face that makes it red. Rashi mefarshin tacha kemin batzek al paneha. Right? Rashi in the Mishnah said that you're putting some sort of dough on your face, and when you take it off, so it reddens the face, and it gives it a more youthful appearance. Anyway, so these activities now are aser. That is clear. The degree of aser is a machlokus of the Mishnah. Why they're aser is what the Gemara now is discussing. So Amar Rabbi Avin, Amar Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina, Gedalus Mishum Oreges. So as far as braiding the hair, that falls under the Malacha, the category of weaving. Kochalus Mishum Koseves. And when you are applying makeup to the face, that is a subcategory of the malacha of writing. And pokeses mishum tove. And when you're doing pokeses, so that is like spinning. So for Rashi, it says that's combing the hair. It's a little bit difficult to understand, even at this juncture of the Gemara, how that could be viewed as a case of spinning thread. And in the second pshat of Rashi, it's also a little bit difficult to understand, where Rashi describes where you're putting dough on the face. And maybe there's some sort of spinning involved with the dough, unclear, but I'm sure it has to do with the fact that I'm not really sure how this practice works in terms of putting dough on the face. But either way, Am Rabbanan Kamei de Rabbi Abao v'chi derech ariga b'kach, v'chi derech kesiva b'kach, v'chi derech tevia b'kach. The Gemara immediately challenges because this is not really how one weaves, meaning braiding his hair is not really associated with weaving. And putting makeup on your face is not really associated with writing. And doing this act of pokesis, let's call it combing hair, it's not really an act of spinning. So as much as the Gemara offered this as a suggestion, the Gemara now seems to be rejecting it. Ela Amar Rabbi Abba, Ledidim, Farshalim, Minei, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina. So Rabbi Abbas says, I heard it directly from Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Chaninas. Now we turn to the top of Tzadi Hamad Aleph, and that is Kochelos Mishum Sovas, and Godelos Pokesos Mishum Bona. So the Gemara now gives what it feels is the more definitive explanations of why these activities are asur. So as far as Kochelos is concerned, that is Sovea, that's dying. So when you're taking makeup and putting on the face, so that is a subcategory of dying the wool, and that is the malacha that it falls under. As far as the other two, Godelis and Pokeses, so that's binyan, that's building. It's a subcategory of the malacha of building. So braiding the hair, you now you're constructing and making braids into the hair. So it's kind of like building. And the same thing regarding Pokeses. Now again, combing the hair, hard to see that it's binyan. Maybe by combing it also means styling and fashioning it in a certain way, possibly, perhaps. Anyway, the chi derech binyan bekacha, and the Gemara says, is that really considered binyan? But the Gemara says, yeah, it is. So in Darish Rabbi Shimon ben Menasya, vayivan Hashem Elokim es hatzelam. So in terms of the construction of Chava, so the pasuk says that Akash Baruch Hu built. Malamish shekliya Akash Baruch Hu lechava veiviya etzal adam shekem akarcha yam karin lekliyasa biniyasa. So the Gemara says that. And by the way, we saw this back in Brachos. The Gemara says that what Kadosh Baruch Hu, what he did for Chava, is that basically he was a stylist. He braided Chava's hair, preparing her for the chasna, in which he's going to unite Chava and Adam together as husband and wife. And the word binyan over here actually means kliya, actually means braiding. Karcha yam, out in the islands. So when they refer to kliyasa, they call it binisa. So you see that the wording that's used is very similar to binyan. And so, yes, braiding is a function of binyan. And so the Gemara says that it is in fact fair to describe the braiding of the hair as, in fact, bona, as building. And so, therefore, it falls under the subcategory of binyan. Tying the Gemara quotes the Bryce, where Shimon Menelazar, Omer, Godalas, Kochalas, and Pokesas, Le'atzma, Petura. If a woman were to do these types of cosmetic activities to herself, so she is going to be patur lechaver to chayavis, but if she does it for a friend, she's going to be chayav. What is the difference between doing it to oneself versus doing it to another? The top Rashi on the Amud writes, "Shein yechola livnos yafeh, ve'ein derech binyan ela isha lechaverta shiroa ve'osa." So Rashi says that when you're doing it to yourself, and apparently mirrors back then weren't that popular, so a person is not doing a good job. And so therefore it doesn't really fall under the category of a malachas boneh, but when you're doing it to somebody else, so obviously you get to see what you're doing. You're doing a qualitative job, and that falls under the category of bona. So the Gemara, that's the difference, says Rashi, between doing these activities to oneself versus doing it to another. Back to the Gemara, v'chein haya Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer. And now the Rashi over here, with the word v'chein, it's not really connected to the previous statement, meaning it's just another halacha regarding Shabbos. So explains Rashi. A woman is not allowed to put some sort of blush, some sort of makeup on her face, because that falls under the category of tzvia, of dying. What we gained over here in this brisa is that we see that this brisa corroborates what we said just moments earlier, that the malacha of dying one's face, putting some sort of makeup application to the face, is in fact going to be a subcategory of soveya. Kochelos mishum tzovas, and now the brisa over here corroborates exactly that point. Tanu Rabbanan acholev. Now over here we have a brisa. Now this brisa is going to be dealing with an assortment of activities on Shabbos, not really connected to that which we were speaking, but these are activities that at one point or another, needs to be discussed. So you see here at the end of the 10th perek, so a couple of odds and ends are put in. So My guess would be that more odds and ends that are just simply inserted over here at the end of the 10th parak. Ten Rabban, the Gemara quotes the Braisa HaCholev. So that is expressing one's milk. V'hammechabetz. That is the curdling of the milk. V'hammegabein. That's the construction of the cheese. So kegrogris, if you do this, and the shear that you do is a grogris, because these are all foods, and the shear, as we've discussed time and again for food, is going to be that of a dried fig. So one would be chayev. Hamechabed v'hamerabed v'harod dechalos devash shagag b'shabes chayev chatas hizid b'yom tov loka arbaim divrei Rebbe Eliezer. So one involved in kibud. Kibud is the sweeping of the floor. Meravet is laying down some water onto the ground so that the dust settles and the dust does not come back up. Back in the day, their houses were not made out of any kind of flooring, but rather the floor of the houses was just simply the ground. And so in order to make sure that the dust settles on the ground, so that you just spray some water onto the ground. That's meraves. Roda chalos devash, that is the scraping off of the honeycombs in order to remove the honey off the honeycombs. So in all these activities, so if you do the mishogeg on Shabbos, you are going to be chayav karban chatos, meaning it's an iser daraisa. On Yontov, you're going to get malchus. There is no kares for Yontov, and therefore there is no karban chatos for Yontov. So the willful violation of these activities on Yontov yields results in malchus. So according to Rabbi Eliezer, these are isuri deraisa. And and the Chachamim say both on Shabbos and on Yontov, this is only an iser derabanan. It's not an iser deraisa. So there are many activities that we just described, six in total that we just described, and a machlokis amongst the Tanaim, whether or not these are violations of Daraisa or they are violations of Durabanans. The Gemara now is going to be discussing what exactly they fall, what category do they fall under. Rav Nachman Bar Gurya Ikla L'Narda Bamine. So Rav Nachman Bar Gurya goes to the town of Narda and they ask him the following question. Cholet Mishomai Mechayev. So the act of milking, so what does that violate? Amar Lahu Mishum Cholet. So the truth of the matter is that he did not have an answer. And so he simply says it falls under the malach of cholev. Now we understand that that's not an answer, and the Gemara is going to say that. Because cholev is not one of the 39 malachas. The question obviously was, which one of the malachas does it fall under? And his answer is that it falls under cholev. It's not an answer, it's just basically a repetition of the question. Mechabitz mishum mai mechayev, in terms of the curdling of the milk. So what malacha is that? Ameluhu mishum mechabitz. And again, here also, he's just simply repeating the question. And megame mishum mai mechayev, and what about Megabin, the making of the cheese? Amaluhu Mishum Megabin. And he says the making of the cheese falls under the category of Megabin, making of the cheese. Again, same thing. Amalei Rabcha Katil Kanei Be'agma Hava. And so they said to him that your Rebbe, so was Katil Kanei Be'agma. He was a cutter of the reeds out in the swamp. Not a flattering comment. And basically, he said, I don't know where you learned, and I don't know what kind of Torah you learned, but you're not answering the questions, and clearly you are showing a lack of mastery of the Torah. Okay, and yes, a biting remark. Also, shall be midrash amalei. So they went and they took the question to the Beis Medrash, and the answer that was provided in the Beis Medrash goes as follows: Cholev chayav mishum mefarik. That, as far as cholev is concerned, it falls under the category of mefarik. Now, mefarik is a tolada. It is a subcategory of a malacha. Which malacha are we talking about? Let's take a look together at Rashi. Rashi writes, Mefarik kamo mefarik masui shaporik ochel mimakum shiniskasa bo. So Rashi says that what you're doing is that you're unsheathing a food. A food is in some sort of protective environment, and what you're doing is that you're removing it from its protective environment. And Rashi continues, what is that? So Rashi says, Vahave told us dash. It is a subcategory of the malach of dash. Dash is one of the 39 malachas we introduced ourselves to in the Mishnah back in the 7th parak. Dash is when I'm taking the kernel and I'm removing the kernel from its from its shell. So that is the malach of dash. Disha, you're basically taking a large animal and you're having it trampling on the kernels in order so that on the seed so that the actual wheat kernel itself is coming out of its shell based on the pressure that's given to it. And so Rashi over here describes that Mefarik is a subcategory of the Malacha of Dash. Rashi says there's another consideration, but Rashi says, but I don't like it. And we continue in the Rashi. The Easter Amei Talada de Kotzer. Now some say that Mefarik is a Talada of Kotzer Velohi. And Rashi says that can't be. Now Kotzer, of course, is harvesting. And Rashi says that milking is not a subcategory of harvesting. The La Mechubar Hu Ela Pakid Va'akir V'kai Be'atine Hadad. Kitvua b'kasheha. The analogy over here is that the milk is in the udder, and it's much like the wheat kernel is found within its shell. And the kotzer is when something is connected to the ground, and I'm detaching it from the ground. So the better analogy over here, says Rashi, to strike is that this is much more comparable to the removing of the seed from its shell, and the rather than trying to compare it to the detachment of a stalk of a grain from the ground. So the and Rashi continues, and the language of Mefarik is not shaykh, unless we're talking about the better language over here would have been used would be the word tolesh. Okay. Anyway, so Rashi says that Mefarik is a subcategory of dash, and so that is answer number one to the question of when a person is cholev. So a woman is either expressing her own milk, or we could be discussing the milking of an animal. So that is a malach on Shabbos, and it falls under the category of Mefarik, which is a subcategory of the malacha of dash. There is a discussion in terms of what happens when the milking needs to be done because of the discomfort of the woman or the cow that is producing the milk, and you're milking just simply to relieve discomfort. So there is a way to do it halachically. I'm not going to discuss it now, but there is that possibility. But if one is doing it without taking into consideration that it's an Isser Shabbos, so we're learning together in our daf, it is in fact an Isser Shabbos. Obviously, it goes without saying, but let's say it. Obviously, if the baby is drinking from the tap, I guess we could also talk about drinking from the tap of the cow, although that is disgusting. So under those circumstances, obviously it would be mutar legamrei. Over here, we're talking about just simply expressing the milk without drinking it immediately. Mechabetz, we're now up to the curdling of the milk. Chai mishum borer, so that is a malacha of borer. And the reason why it's a malacha of borer, because what is borer? It's separation. I'm separating good from the bad. Over here, when you're curdling, so you're taking the fatty parts of the milk and you're separating it from the whey, from the watery part of the milk. And so that is a malacha of borer. And megabein chai mishum bona. Now, as far as making cheese is concerned, making cheese is going to be a subcategory of the malacha of binyan, of bona. Now, hamechabed, hamerabed, va'arod dechalos vash. Now, if one were to sweep or to put a layer of water on the ground or to scrape off the honey from the honeycombs, shagav b'shabbos chayiv chatos, he's b'yom tov lokar abam, div Rabbi Eliezer. And according to the Shita of Rabbi Eliezer, one would be chayiv karban chatos if one involved in any of these activities. I'm a Rebbe Lazar of Rebbe Lazar. The Amara says, my time under Rebbe Eliezer. What is behind the reason of Rebbe Eliezer? Dichsiv, the Pasuk says, Vaitbol oso bi'aros ha-devash. He dipped it into the honeycombs. Now, he describes as Yaros ha-devash. This is the Pasuk in Shmuel Aleph. This is a description of Yonasan after the war, where there was a fast that was instituted for that day. Yonasan did not hear about the fast, and he was surrounded by honeycomb, and so he ate some of the honeycomb. And meanwhile, the Gemara right now is fixated on the fact that it's called Ya'aros Dvash. V'chima inyan Ya'ar Eitzel Dvash. Why is it, why is the Navi putting together a forest and honey? Elalom l'chama Ya'ar Tolesh Mimona B'Shabbat Chayiv Chatos. Just like by Ya'ar, a forest, if I were to detach anything from the forest, i.e. I pick a tree off of the ground, so one's in violation on Shabbos of Tolesh, Avchalos Dvash, Arodim Mimona B'Shabbat Chayiv Chatos. Similarly, when one is to remove the honey from the honeycomb, so that also will violate a malacha. Obviously, that wasn't the purpose and the intent of the Navi, but basically it's a smach, it's a remez in the Navi, this idea that the detachment of the honey from the honeycomb is similar to that of the detachment of a tree in the forest. And that is the malachas that are being violated. We're going to come back to a moment in terms of the descriptions that were just given of these malachas, but let's just finish up in terms of this particular section of the Gemara. Amemar shari zilcha b'mechuzah. Amemar allowed the act of zilcha in the town of Mechuzah. What is the act of zilcha? Rashi over here writes, l'rabbis abayis, to sweep the floor. Now, Rashi goes on to explain, v'ritzba savanim haisa b'chol ha'ir. In the town of Mechuzah, everybody had a stone floor. The reason why rebus was prohibited is because the act of rebus is an act in which you are taking the floor, which is really just ground, and you're smoothing it out. And either it's a subcategory of bona. No, let's not either. It is a subcategory of the malach of bona, and so therefore it's going to be aser. It's either going to be aser min haTorah, or it'll be aser min derabanan. Anyway, it's aser because the floors back in the day, in standard bavel, was made up of the ground. However, in the town of Mechuza, since all of the floors in the houses are made up of stone, and there's not going to be an issue or concern of moving earth around, so therefore a Mamar extended a heter in which it's permissible to do so. Amar Tama Maimar Rabban Adam Asilashwigomas. The reason why the Chachamim forbade it is because of the leveling of the earth, the leveling of the ground. Hachaleka Gumos, but here in the town of Mechuza we don't have Gumos. Our floors are made up of stone, and so therefore there's no concern, and therefore an allowance to go ahead and to sweep the floors. Whether or not the Gemara now is basically given carte blanche, where anyone who has a hard floor is allowed to sweep, it certainly sounds that way from the Gemara. Tosfos discusses it towards the bottom of our Amud, Divra Amasko Vehaina. Tosfos discusses whether or not it now becomes Mutar Legamri to sweep the floors. Rav Tusfa Ashkechila Ravina Dekam Mitzar Mehevla. Rav Tusfa found Ravina, and he had a hard time breathing, meaning they were in a house, and basically the dust and the dirt of the house was not settled, and it was coming up, and it gave him a difficult time breathing. The Amrile Markashisha Bereda Rav Ashkechila Rav Ashi Dekam Mitzar Mehevla. So he says, I'll tell you a similar circumstance where we found Rav Ashi also had difficult breathing in the house. Amrile Lo Sevela Mar Lahad Tanya Rosela Ravis is based on Shabbos. So let's say a person wants to do Revitza on Shabbos. Now, Revitza is basically laying down the water on the ground. Now, we learned in the Braisa that it would be usher to do so, according to Rabbi Eliezer Nisra D'Raisa, according to the Chachamim Nisra D'Rabbanan, but nevertheless in the Mishnah we learned that it's usher. However, if one would like, however, the ground to settle by sprinkling some water on top of it, on Shabbos there is a way to do so. And what you do is the following. You're going to bring now a cup of water. It's a cup filled with water. Now on Shabbos, one is allowed to wash parts of the body, the face, the hands, the feet. And so what you do is you just simply go around the house, washing your face, hands, and feet, allowing the water to drip onto the ground. We're not outside. There is no Zriya. And so therefore, just simply by virtue of the fact that the water now will fall to the ground, so that'll create the flattening of the ground so that no water comes up. V'nimsa habayis mit rabeitz me'alav. And the ground is going to now be watered, and so that the dust does not come up. Amrale lava daite. And he says, oh, I didn't remember. Or Rashi alternatively says, I don't agree with that. Right? Rashi offers here two explanations of what his response is to that suggestion. Tana, and just finishing up now to the Mishnah, Isha Chachamah Marvetzes Beis Abba Shabbos, a woman who's knowledgeable in the areas of halacha, so she could sweep her house on Shabbos. Va'ina Desfira Lanka Rabbi Shimon Shari Afila Chatchila. And nowadays, let me just go back for a moment. The Isha Chachamah, meaning that she's a Tamach Chacham, she's the daughter of a Tamach Chacham, and she hears from her father the strategy that we just learned together of washing her hands, feet, and face around the house in order to keep the dust down. So she'll do it in the manner that we just described. And nowadays, Vaidna Desir Lanka Rabbi Shimon Shara Afila Chatchila. And now that we do Paskin by Rabbi Shimon, by Devashin Miskavin, Devashin Miskavin is Mutter according to Rabbi Shimon, and we do Paskin that way. So Merabich, therefore, is now going to be Mutter Legamre. The idea that really primarily what you want to do is you simply want the dust to settle. The fact that the earth may get leveled, the ground may get leveled, is something that you're not intentional for. So therefore it falls under the category of Davashay Miskavin. We'll have to add also to this point of the Gemara that it's not a psik ratio, that it's not something that's inevitable. Because if it's something that's inevitable, even Rabbi Shimon would agree that it's Aser. So because we do pass like Rabbi Shimon, so one is allowed to sprinkle water in order to keep the dust on the ground and to keep the air a little bit cleaner within the house. That is the Gemara's conclusion regarding the rebuts, the sprinkling of the water on the ground. For a moment now, let's go back and let's just go over a point and a really interesting Tosos. The Gemara now has laid down over here an assortment of different activities that are going to be prohibited on Shabbos, either Midarais or Midarabanan, and it's connected to various malachos. Of the things that we discussed, we discussed milking, we discussed curdling, and we talked about the production of cheese. Now, the production of cheese, the Gemara says, is what? So it falls under the category of bone. Basically, what you're doing is you're taking a a liquid, and by allowing the enzymes to act, you're basically now turning into a solid. And the Gemara describes it as binyan, as building. If you see the Tosfos over here, Harod Chalos Devash Temelari, Amai Loke BeYamtov, the Rebbe Eliezer. If you remember, Rebbe Eliezer says that not only is this an activity that's usher on Shabbos, it's also an activity that's usher on Yontov as well. And Tosfos over here is bothered because over here we're talking about basically preparing foods on Yontov, scraping the honey off the honeycomb, or making cheese on Yontov, and we're talking about preparation of foods on Yontov. Now on Shabbos, obviously all malacha is aser, and even if it's involved in food preparation, it's going to be aser. And when I say even, meaning many of the malachas of Shabbos, 11 in total, are associated with the baking of bread. So obviously on Shabbos, there is no heter whatsoever to make food on Shabbos, obviously. All the food has to be prepared before Shabbos. Meanwhile, when it comes to Yontov, so there's a heter gamur to cook on Yontov. And Tosfos right now is assuming that that is not only limited to cooking, but basically any type of food preparation. Now, if that assumption is correct, so Tosfos opens himself up to a wonderful question. And that is that we just learned together that on Yontov, one is not allowed to make cheese. On Yontov, one is not allowed to scrape the honeycomb. Why not? Meaning this is basically a way of gaining food on Yontov. It's food preparation, and although it requires to violate the malacha, but nevertheless, the heter yantav, the heter ochel nefesh on yantav, allows one to violate malacha on yantav in order to prepare food. And so Tosfos opens up with the question, Tamilari, am I loka biyantav? Why are you going to get malchus on yantav? V'le Rabbi Eliezer v'rabban anami lo pligi elamishum delo chashiv le malacha. V'adnam beper kamed de megillah. Ein ben yantav lo shabbos el ochel nefesh bovad. Rabbi Yehuda amar av machshiri ochel nefesh. So there is a heter, of course, on Yontov for ochel nefesh. V'kamar b'gemara ma'itamet tanakam ha'makro, hu levado yaseh lachem, hu v'lo machshirav. V'rav Yehuda k'siv hu v'k'siv lachem. Kam b'machshir she'efshar lasos b'erav Yontov, v'kam b'machshir she'i efshar. Mechlal de ochel nefesh shari Rabbi Yehuda afilo b'efshar. So when it comes to ochel nefesh, the idea that you can prepare food on Yontov applies to all foods. And even for foods that could have been prepared before Yontov, meaning obviously cheese could have been made before Yontov, but if it falls under the category of ochel nefesh, it would be mutar legamrei. The only time we make a distinction between foods that could have been prepared before Yontov versus foods on Yontov itself is only machshirei ochel nefesh. Only the activities that are involved in not directly preparing the food, but helping prepare the instruments that are going to be that are necessary to make the food. So that's the machshiri ochel nefesh. So that is open for a debate. But for ochel nefesh itself, it's mutar legamrei in yontav. And if that's true, so then how do you understand our gemara, where our gemara says that one cannot make cheese on yontav, one can't scrape honeycombs on yontav? Why not? So Tosfos goes on to discuss this in more detail. The Omari, as we go now to the end of Tosfos, really interesting Tosfos. So Tosfos gives a couple of akimtas in terms of maybe the scraping off the honey right at the end of Yontov, where it no longer can be eaten on Yontov itself. Or maybe they were talking about the dvash shehidvish, and maybe the honey itself is at the point where it's no longer edible, or maybe it's also ba'ana, meaning numerous suggestions within the Gemara in terms of why specifically the honey is not edible. But it certainly sounds like from Tosfos that if the honey is edible, he's certainly considering the idea that it would be mutter. Umiyo temelari came into mutter lagabim b'yantov min haTorah. So in other words, there is this idea that on Yontov one is allowed to make cheese at least min haTorah. Meaning our Gemara's conclusion is that it is prohibited to do so. It's an Isser Derabbanan to do so, but at least Minatora would be mutter to do so. Again, it falls under the category of Ochel Nefesh. What does that tell us? So Tosfos says, Afilo be'efshar, afilo lo yehe mutter midrabbanan, ela b'delo efshar, imkein nafal be'iso b'yomtov, yehe mutter livnoso b'yomtov, demitok shuhutter b'nyan l'tzorach demegamein, havi mishum bone, kedamar b'samach hutter nami, shalol l'tzorach. Shaloi kenu sherish v'shemesh. So Tosfos asks an unbelievable question. Once there is at least a heter min haTorah to go ahead and to make cheese on Yontif, and making cheese on Yontif, the Ar Gemara over here files under the category of bona, which means that bona on Yontif would be mutter because of the heter v'ochel nefesh. So we also have another principle that was outlined in Masechta Beitza on Daf Yud Beis, and that is the idea of mitoch. Mitoch shehutro letzorach, hutro namishalo letzorach. Malachas that are permitted on Yontif for the purposes of ochel nefesh. So you could take that very same malacha and use it for other activities as well, provided that everyone benefits from that other activity. This is the idea of mitoch. And the Gemara over there says, it's a machlos between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, but the Gemara over there says that according to Beis Hillel, so we do operate with the principle of mitoch. Once the allowance of making cheese on Yontif is in fact true, at least min haTorah, and once now we have a heter of binyan on Yontif, and once we have the principle of mitoch, so Tosfos at least entertains the idea that if your house falls down on Yontif, so you're allowed to rebuild the house on Yontif, again, provided that you're going to be benefiting from the building on Yontif itself. It's an amazing question on Tosfos' part, using all the principles that we have established. It's almost as if we know there's an answer to the question. We know that there's no way that the building of a house on Yontif would be allowed, but certainly, however, once you take all of the Gemaras and put them together, certainly at least to articulate the question is rather amazing. See Tosfos for more on this point. Anyway, we are at the Mishnah on the bottom of Tzadi Heyman Aleph, after having finished now an assortment of various malachas. So the Mishnah over here is going to be discussing one more aspect of Shabbos. Again, really not related to our perek, but it is somewhat of an assorted topic, and I guess I guess Rabbi Yehuda Nasi just simply put it over here at the end of the 10th parak. Hatosh me'atzitz nakov, if one were to now pluck from an earthenware pot. Now the earthenware pot has got holes in it, and holes on the bottom of it. And the assumption that the Gemara makes time and again throughout Shas is this idea that when there are holes on the bottom of an earthenware pot, and it's situated over the ground, so then there is a yinika. That means to say that it gains its nourishment from the ground. So those holes allow for communication from the ground actually into the pot. So it's as if to say now that this pot is grounded. And so therefore, if one were to pluck any vegetation growing out of this pot that has holes in it, it would be tantamount to actually plucking from the ground itself. And therefore, you'd be chayiv. So atol shmeatzitz nakuv chayiv v'sheino nakuv pater. However, if the pot does not have any holes in it, and so therefore it is not considered like it's in the ground, and so therefore it would be pater of al asr, it'd be asr mid rabbanan to do so, but it would not be a violation of an isr da araisa. Rabbi Shimon pater bezeh bezeh. Now Rabbi Shimon's of the opinion that in both cases you'd be pater. Rabbi Shimon seemingly is of the position that even when the pot has holes in it, that's not considered as if it's grounded, and it's considered as if the pot and the contents therein are detached from the ground, not attached to the ground. The Gemara starts the discussion, Rami le Abai le Ravam, Rami le Rabbi Chiya barav le Rav, Tanan. We're going to start with our Mishnah, Rabbi Shimon poter bezeh bezeh. So in our Mishnah, it's clearly articulated the position, Rabbi Shimon, that a pot, both with or without holes, is not considered like it's connected to the ground. Alma nakov le Rabbi Shimon kasheino nakov mashvilei, and the Gemara just simply spells this out. A pot with holes in it, according to Rabbi Shimon, is going to be the same halachically as a pot that does not have holes in it. Uriminu, and on that the question now is going to be posed because we seemingly have another brisa that goes against this. Rabbi Shimon Omer, ein bein nakov le sheino nakov. There is no difference between a pot with holes in it versus a pot without holes in it. Ella lahachshir zrayim bavad, and except for the halacha of hachshir zrayim. Now that means to say as follows: that if I have seeds that are growing in a pot, and Rashi over here writes Ella lahachshir zrayim bavad hazrum b'socho atzitz nakuv, if it is a pot that has holes in it, eino mekabel hachshir l'tumah. So it's not going to be mukshir l'kabel tumah. A quick refresher in terms of hachshir. We've gone over this time and again throughout Shas, and there is a Masechta in Shas dedicated to it. It happens to be we don't learn it. because it's tucked away in the end of Zrayim. The Masechta is called Machshirin. So the idea behind Hechsher is that if I have a seed or any food, in order for it to be Mekabel Tuma, it first needs Hechsher. It needs preparation. The preparation is simple. It means it needs to contact, come into contact with one of the seven liquids. And then and only then, it is a Mukhshar Mekabel Tuma. Now, over here, we're going to start off with a very basic rule. And that is, water, of course, is one of the seven liquids. So that means to say that if a seed were to come into contact with water, it's now Mukhshar Mekabel Tuma. That's true, but that's only true after the seed, or any food for that matter, is plucked out of the ground. As long as the seed, the vegetable, whatever food we're talking about, is connected to the ground, and it comes into contact with a liquid, it's not Mukhshar Mekabel Tuma. Now if you think about it, of course it makes perfect sense. Because consider any vegetation that's growing out of the ground, any wheat that's growing out of the ground, so of course it's in the environment of rain. Water's coming on it all the time. And so therefore that means to say that everything that's plucked out of the ground is going to be Mukhshar Mekabel Tuma. I mean, that might be the conclusion, but it's not. Meaning that's simply not the case. When it's grounded, it simply is not considered Hechsher, even if it comes into contact with liquid. It only will be Mukhshar only after it's plucked out of the ground. With that stated, so now we've just established that as long as we can identify an item being grounded, so therefore it becomes impervious to this Hechsher. So, when I have a pot now, so Rabbi Shimon in the Braisa tells us that the difference between the only difference between a pot that has holes in it versus a pot does not have holes in it is this idea of Hechsher Zrayim. And as Rashi over here, we're going to go back to the Rashi. Hazrum besochem mi atzitz nakov eino mekabel hechsher letuma v'she'eino nakov mekabel hechsher detalushu. So you see over here in this brisa that according to Rabbi Shimon, if I have a pot that does not have holes in it, it's considered detached from the ground. It's considered like the plants inside of it are not connected to the ground, and therefore, if it comes into contact with the liquid, it now will be mukhshar. And clearly, the brisa over here is authored by Rabbi Shimon. So, that means to say that over here, we are making a sharp distinction between a pot with a hole versus a pot without a hole. And meanwhile, in our Mishnah here in Shabbos, at the end of the 10th paragraph of Shabbos, Rabbi Shimon seems to make no distinction between the two. So the Gemara's response is as follows. Amalei l'chol mili Rabbi Shimon ketalosh mashrilei. Really, the truth of the matter is that according to Rabbi Shimon, he views it as talosh. He views it as if it is in fact attached. And as far as Tumah is concerned, we know that the Torah makes an exception in this particular area of halacha. Shenamah, the pasuk says, I call zera zarua asher yizareya. So the Torah, when speaking and introducing to us to this idea of hechsher, so the Torah uses the word zera and obviously repeats the word multiple times in the pasuk, three times in total. And that comes to teach us that when it comes to this idea of Hechsher Zrayim, so there, the Torah, by repeating the word again and again, so it is telling us that the seed has to be totally grounded. Right? Rashi, Asher Yizarea, Kedersha Adam Otzil Zriya, Lima'uti Mechubar Koldahu, Lahachi Ahani Zriyas Yesera Dekra, Umiyu She'ino Nakuv Talush Gamorhu. So, if the pot does not have holes in it, it is considered talush, but as it relates over here to the idea of Hechsher Zrayim, by virtue of the fact that it says Al Kol Zera Zerua, that means to say that even a pot that normally is not considered connected to the ground, i.e. it has no holes in it, for the halachas of Hechsher, so it will be considered connected. The Torah is giving a special ribui in that scenario. But outside of that, there is in fact going to be a distinction between a pot with holes in it, and a pot that does not have holes in it. So the Gemara now has established that according to Rabbi Shimon, there is in fact a distinction to be made, and the only time that they are going to be the same is only as it relates to Hechsher. With that stated, the Gemara now continues. We are on the top of Sadi Hamad Beis, Ba'minei Ha'usaba Me Rabbi Zera, The following question was asked from Rabbi Zera. Sharish keneged negev mali amar Rabbi Shimon. So now that we've established that according to Rabbi Shimon, the pot that has holes in it is going to be considered. According to Rabbi Shimon, the pot that does not have holes in it and the pot that does have holes in it are both going to be considered talish. They're both going to be considered detached. And the only time there's a distinction to be drawn is only going to be in the case of Hechsher. But generally speaking, it's going to be considered detached. The Gemara now wants to know what is going to be the scope of the Shita of Rabbi Shimon. At what point precisely is Rabbi Shimon going to yield the floor and basically say, that hole is too big? Or the connection is right now too close, or even Rabbi Shimon will agree that a pot with holes in it is in fact going to be connected to the ground. So, let's entertain the following discussion. According to Rabbi Shimon, what if Sharish Kenega Nekev? Let's say that you can clearly see the root of that which is growing in the pot, and it's right up against the hole. And so basically now, the root is hovering right above the ground. What would Rabbi Shimon say in that scenario? Ishtik v'lo amar le v'lo mini. And he did not have a response for that, meaning that he doesn't know. Meaning he knows that Rabbi Shimon views a pot to be detached. With or without holes, the pot is going to be detached. That part's clear. And even when the root is opposite the hole, so he says, I'm not sure. I just don't know. Zimne chadish kached yasa bekamer. Now, on another occasion, the student who asked Rabbi Zera the question heard Rabbi Zera giving shir, and he made the following statement. Umode Rabbi Shimon, shimnikev bechdei taraso, that Rabbi Shimon will agree that if the nekev, if the hole, is large enough where the pot now is no longer mekabel tuma, the hole is so large that the pot now is no longer, this earthenware pot is no longer going to be considered a kli, and no longer going to be mekabel tuma, there Rabbi Shimon would agree that now we've created communication between the pot and the ground, and the contents of the pot are considered now grounded. So, amar le hashta sharish keneged nekev bayinei. V'lo amar le v'lo midi. So he says, wait 1 second. I'm asking you where the root is clearly evident and the root is directly above the ground and you weren't able to answer that. And nika b'chtei tarasu mibaye. And now, when the hole is large enough where the kli no longer is a kli, and you're telling me that Rabbi Shimon agrees in that circumstance, meaning, why couldn't you answer my question? And meanwhile, you're answering a question which seemingly is easier or simpler. So Amar Abaye, V'i Itmar Lahad Rabbi Zera Hachi Hu De'Itmar. So the Gemara says, okay. So Rabbi Zera's statement, we have to edit it just a little bit. And this is what he said: Umod Rabbi Shimon Sheim Nikev Lamata Mirevius. That what Rabbi Shimon will agree is that if the hole is below a revius, then Rabbi Shimon would agree that the contents of the pot are connected to the ground. And when we say less than a revius, we mean as follows. If you can imagine now a simple pot, an earthenware pot, where exactly is the hole going to be situated? So if the hole's on the side, so Rabbi Shimon will tell you, okay, even when the hole's on the side, that doesn't create communication between the contents of the pot and the ground. What if the hole was directly on the bottom? So I wasn't clear about this point, but one can easily imagine that if the hole's on the bottom of the pot, so then we have a direct line of communication between the ground and the pot, and that's considered now grounded. The contents of the pot would be grounded. What the Gemara now is describing is that Rabbi Zera's limitation of Rabbi Shimon is that if, let's say, the hole is on the side of the pot, but really low to the bottom of the pot, so low that if I removed all the earth and all the dirt from the pot, and I poured in water, and the pot couldn't even hold a revius of water, that's considered as if the hole really is on the bottom of the pot, and then communication is established between the ground and the pot, and therefore the contents of the pot are considered grounded. So when he says that if the hole finds itself less than a revius, it's like we just got done describing, where I remove the earth, I remove all the contents of the pot, I try to pour a revius of water into the pot, I can't even hold the revius, that's considered that the hole is on the bottom, and even Rabbi Shimon would agree that under those circumstances, the pot now is considered, and the contents of the pot now are considered grounded. And so basically, let's just quickly summarize before we finish off the daf on this discussion regarding when a pot is considered grounded or not. So according to our Mishnah, if it has holes in it. And now, by the way, we can go back to our Mishnah and we can have a sharper understanding of our Mishnah. According to the Tanna Kamma, it doesn't matter where the hole is located. The hole could be on the bottom, the hole could be on the side, as long as there is a hole and that pot is hovering above the ground. So under those circumstances, the Chachamim, the Tanna Kamma of our Mishnah, is of the position that it is considered a grounded pot. Only when the pole does not, pot has no holes in it whatsoever, then and only then is it not considered grounded. And plucking it from it on Shabbos would not be Nisa D'Oraisa, it would only be Nisa D'Rabbanan, according to the Chachamim. Rabbi Shimon says that a pot with a hole in it is not considered grounded. Now, for the halachas of Zoraim, it's different, but that's because of a drasha. But Rabbi Shimon's of the opinion that a hole in the pot does not make it grounded. Now, what we just got done discussing in the Gemara is Rabbi Shimon is not saying this flatly. Rabbi Shimon has a little bit of nuance. And the nuance is that if the hole is situated on the very bottom of the pot, even he would agree to the Chachamim that now the contents of the pot are considered in the ground. Plucking from that pot would be an Issur D'Oraisa of Tolish. And then the Gemara just visited a couple of other questions. What if, according to Rabbi Shimon, the hole's on the side, but the root is extending out of that hole? Would Rabbi Shimon agree in that case? Unclear. But in other words, but that's what we've been trying to do, is just see the scope, the range of the Shita of Rabbi Shimon. And now finishing up the daf, Amar Rava. Chamesh midos b'kli cheres. Now, dealing with a kli cheres, so basically we're going to be looking at five shiurim, right? Literally, midos over here means measurements, but there basically are five shiurim as it relates to an earthenware pot. We already know this, but let's just say this quickly before going through the Gemara, and that is the idea that when I have a kli cheres, it is a kli, and it is going to be makabel tumah, but that, of course, only is if the tumah comes into the interior airspace of the kli cheres. Then and only then is it going to be makabel tumah. If the source of tumah comes into contact with the exterior of a kli cheres, it is ein makabel tumah. Once a kli cheres becomes tameh, when does it become tahor? So there is no, we just went over this recently, there is no tefillah b'mikvah, you don't tovel in the mikvah, but rather you have to be shover, you have to break it. Okay, the very basic halachas as relates to kli cheres, the Gemara over here is now going over some basic parameters of when is it a kli, when is it not a kli, and we're going to divide this into five different categories. Category number one, nikav kamotzi mashka tahor melatame gistera, v'adayin kli hu lekadosh bo es mechatas. Shir number one, there is a small, tiny hole somewhere in the kli cheres. Now, how small a hole are we talking about? So we're not going to be giving a linear dimension, we're not going to be giving a circumference, but we're going to be describing the hole in terms of whether or not water can enter and exit. Water can exit, but water cannot enter. Meaning, if I took this kli cheres with this very small hole in it, and I filled it with water, so the pressure of the water inside is going to have the water drip out through this hole. However, if I took this very same kli cheres and I put it into some sort of pool, the water is not going to be able to come in because the hole is not that big. So if we're describing a hole of this kind of size, where water can exit but not enter, so it is fundamentally a kli. And I'm just working backwards. I'm going to start off with the second point and I'll come back to the first point. In fact, it's going to be so much a kli that I could use it for kiddush mechatas. The Torah describing when preparing the mechatas, the solution of the ashes of the paraduma together with the mayim chayim. So the Torah says you have to mix it into a keli. And so, clearly the Torah gives us the requirement that it has to be a halachic kli. It has to have the status of a kli. And so therefore, when the hole is this small, it is considered a kli. You can even be mekadesh mechatas, which just simply means, for all intents and purposes, it's a kli. The only thing, however, is that it's going to be removed from the status of being a gistera. Now, gistera is what's called a shard. When you have a kli cheres that breaks, but the remainder of it still has, a piece of it still has utility, in halacha that's called a gistera, and now that has the status of a kli. However, if the gistera has a hole, and even though the hole is as small as we just got done describing, then it loses the status of a gistera. It's basically, it's a used item, and now with a hole in it, it basically is worthless. The Gemara is going to spell this out in tomorrow's daf, But that's the basic idea. So that's level number one, shear number one. Shear number two, Nika Bikonis Mashke, Tarm Lakash Bo Mechatas, Vadain Klu Lahakshir Bo Zroi.
Now, if we are talking about a hole that is now large enough where water can both go in and come out, or let me do it the other way, because that's the better way to say it, where water can go out and also come in as well, so the hole is that big. So, at this point in time, it is, now the language over here is tahor melekashbo, but in other words, the better way to say it, Rashi says this, is batal melekashbo mechatas. So at this point in time, now you can no longer use it for preparing the mechatas, meaning it's not a kli. However, it's not a kli legabe mechatas, which is the highest threshold of being a kli. However, it is a kli lahakshir bozraim, meaning if it is found in this kli, so in the it is considered now detached from the ground, and that means to say that if I had any kind of vegetation growing in it and liquid came into contact with it, it will now be mukshir lekabel tuma because it's considered detached from the ground. Number three, nikev kishorish katan. Let's say the hole is big enough where a small root can go through that hole. Tar malahakshir bozraim v'adain kliu lekabel bozesim. So at this point in time now, if this was over the ground, it's considered now grounded so that the contents therein are not susceptible to hechsher. On the other hand, it's still a kli, l'kabel bozesim. It could still hold olives. What does the Gemara mean by that? It means to say that vis-a-vis tumah tahara, it's a kli. It could be mekabel tumah as a kli. Nikev, we're up to number four. Nikev kamotzei zesim. If, let's say, the holes are large enough where an olive can go in and out, so it's no longer a kli. It's no longer going to be mekabel tuma. However, it is able to hold pomegranates. Pomegranates obviously being a larger fruit than that of olives. So that means to say that once olives can slip in and out of that hole, so it's large enough that the olives no longer can hold olives, so vis-a-vis tuma tahara, it's no longer a kli. However, and this is the way Rashi understands it. However, if let's say we reassign the kli, and that means to say that, look, we realize now I can't use it to store my olives, but I reassign it now to hold my pomegranates, only in the case of reassignment, now it is able to be mekabel tuma. And finally, number five, nikev kamotzi rimonim tar miklum. If the hole in this kli is so large now that it can't even hold a pomegranate, so at this point in time, it's not a kli at all. And finally, v'im hukav tzamid psil ad shipaches rubo. Now, if there is a seal on the top, meaning this is a description we saw in Parshas Chukas, when having an earthenware jug where it's sealed, and there's a lid, and that lid is sealed on the top, so then it becomes impervious to tumma, because as we already described, the tumma can only go interior, not exterior. And so with a seal on, with a lid on top, and that lid is sealed, so it can't go, the tumah cannot go inside, and this will maintain achiv chasrubo until the majority of it is opened up. Tomorrow we're going to open up with a description of what exactly that means, in terms of what does that mean that it becomes impervious to tumah until it's opened in the majority, a better description of that will come up in tomorrow's daf. Let's quickly recap our daf today. We described the first the malachas of the Mishnah, which the Mishnah itself prohibits the activities of braiding one's hair and putting makeup on and pokesis, which let's just call it combing. So these activities are asr on Shabbos. Why are they asr? That was our opening discussion in the Gemara. Gemara gave a couple of suggestions. The Gemara rejected that. The Gemara gave another series of suggestions. Kocheles is a function of tzaveya, and fixing your hair is a function of binyan. We see that by Chava. Our second discussion in today's daf is regarding other activities on Shabbos that are prohibited. Milking, curdling, making cheese, sweeping, putting water on the ground, and scraping honey off the honeycombs, an assortment of other activities. Machlokus, whether it's an Issa d'Oraisa or an Issa d'Rabbanan. Rabbi Eliezer says an Issa d'Oraisa, the Chachamim say an Issa d'Rabbanan. What exactly do they file under according to Rabbi Eliezer? The Gemara gave a number of suggestions for what malachas they file under. Cholev is a subcategory of Mefarik, which is a subcategory of Dosh, as explained by Rashi. Mechabit's curdling is a subcategory of borer. Megabe, making cheese, is a subcategory of binyan. Based on that, a really interesting discussion within Tosos we saw this morning regarding the idea of making cheese on Yontif, is that acceptable? Is that okay? Midaraisa, Tosos wants to argue it is. What are the ramifications of that point? Tosos discusses it. Really interesting Tosos. In terms of sweeping and putting water on the ground and scraping honey off the honeycombs, so the Gemara was clear about the last one, which is that we have a pasuk in Navi that speaks to the idea that it really is a subcategory of tolish because it's connected to a yar like a forest. As far as sweeping and putting water on the ground, so the Gemara describes that as being part of the act of bona because you're moving earth around. Because back then they had earthen floors. What if you had a stone floor? Our Gemara discussed that briefly on the end of the Amud Aleph. A Memar gave an allowance for the people Mechuzah to sweep their floor because their floors were stone floors. And finally, last thing we discussed, which covered the Amud Beis, is what happens when you have a pot that has holes in it and it's hovering over the ground. So is the contents of the pot going to be considered grounded? According to the Tanakhama, yes. Only when the pot has no holes in it is that pot not considered grounded, and plucking something out of that pot would not be an Issa D'Oraisa. It still would be an Issa D'Rabbanan. Rabbi Shimon says that there's no difference. Pot with or without holes is not considered grounded. By Hechsher, it is considered grounded, but again, that's based on a special drasha. Rabbi Shimon will yield to the Tanakhama under certain circumstances. And then finally, on the Amud Beis, we also discussed Kli Cheres and the Shiurim of a Kli Cheres. At what point in time is a Kli Cheres no longer considered a Kli? And we went through five different levels. Level number one, the hole is large enough where water can seep out but not come in. Level number two, water can go in and out of the hole. No longer then is it going to be a Kli for the preparation of the Mechatas. Number three, a small root can go through that hole. At that point in time, the contents of the pot are considered grounded, no longer susceptible to Hechsher. Number four, olives can get through that hole. So at that point in time, it's no longer a Kli. It's not going to be Mekabel Tumah anymore. And I didn't make this point, but it's not too late. And if it was Tameh, and the hole is large enough where olives can go through, it's going to lose its Tumah, so says Rashi. And finally, number five, the fifth shear is that it can't even hold the pomegranate. Meaning if I went through reassigning it, where I'm going to now no longer use it for olives, but use it now for pomegranates, it would be Mekabel Tumah. But if the hole is large enough where the pomegranate is going to go through that hole, it's not going to be a Kli under any circumstance. And then the end of the Braisa talking about where if it has a lid and the lid is sealed on the top of it, so then it becomes impervious to Tumah until the majority of it opens up. And we're going to explain tomorrow better what exactly that means. Ad kan.